This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to another Tuesday morning here on Manawatu's People Radio, 999 AM, the voice of your community. That's right, you're here with the team from Tenants Union and our show on called Flatting Today, where we talk about all things housing. Can be flatting, can just be general housing topics. But I'm Cam.
And I'm Daniel.
Excellent. We look forward to entertaining you for the next half hour or so on topics about housing. And what is on today's agenda for conversation, Daniel?
So today we'll have a bit of a chat about probably something that we shared on our social media about a week ago now, but that's how it goes sometimes when we do our recordings. So in the last wee while, probably the last year or two, there's been a bit of a shift in property investment, particularly the small, what we often refer to as the mae and pa investors, starting to make their way out.
Yes. So, I mean, I think it's in Kiwi culture, right, that we are sold the Kiwi dream, and part of the Kiwi dream is you own a quarter acre section, have a house, and 2.5 children, whatever the average is. But the idea is that we have been taught, and it was even, I think, through business, in my business degree, that if you look at finance and investing, property was always seen as the preferred way to build wealth and investments, as in you own a property and then you own a second property and you're going to build so much wealth from it by having these properties as, you know, what you would call mum and dad investors, you know, buying a second house or capitalizing on the value of their own home. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work in the real world.
It's one of those things that has worked for a very long time, but it never really recognized that it was fundamentally unsustainable, because house prices can't keep going up forever. Otherwise, you know, house prices are effectively infinite, which is not feasible for anyone to be able to pay for at best.
And then you become a slave to the lender in the sense of that you are borrowing millions upon millions of dollars to buy a house that you will never ever be able to pay back.
Yep. And, you know, it's the wealth is only created when house prices increase faster than the prices of everything else. So if it's just going up by inflation, you're not creating wealth. Your money in the house is just stuck.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not contributing to other production. I mean, this is something we've talked about before on the show. Any capital you put in the house, hey, all good. You can only access it again when you sell the house. And the only way anyone else can access it is when that house gets sold. If you put it into something like stocks, then, I mean, there's other problems with stocks, but it's effectively lending to help increase economic production.
Yes, and we were always taught during, like, in one of the finance papers and stuff that I did, that, like, and even in terms of marketing, like, you buy a property as an investment property to own for 25, 30 years, that's how you get the long term, that's how you get the value of it, because you're buying it for a long term investment. Housing is a 30 or 40 year investment, not a buy it now and sell it in 12 months' time for twice the price situation.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, that's part of what's happened recently. A lot of people have brought, particularly on the house prices being really high just after COVID. And some of them are having a bit of a panic because, of course, still paying pretty hefty mortgage costs.
Yes.
And all the other things. And the rents have, in most places, stabilized or gone down a little. So they're getting a bit less income. and the amount that they could get if they sold it has gone down a lot.
Yes. So how does the traditional term mum and dad investors getting out of the property market actually affect it?
So I mean, there's a few different things. The first one being, of course, is more people getting out means more houses being sold. More houses being sold, prices will go down.
Because there's more supply than is demand.
Yeah, and the demand's still pretty high. But we can at least get it a little bit more equivalent, I suppose. But it does mean that people who couldn't afford to buy a house previously, if they wanted to, they could in theory buy one just because the prices have gone down enough. So it's one of those property investors getting out means less competition for people who want to get in, whether they are other property investors or owner-occupiers.
So it's in the thinking of it at the start, of the start of this journey, where mum and dad investors are divesting to get their money out now because they're all starting to retire.
Or in some cases panic because they think they can't get anything out and probably didn't leave their house sitting there long enough to accrue value, with a reminder that it might not.
Yep. Does it not rely on the fact, though, that it's the people coming into the market being in a position to afford those properties at that price?
Well, it does rely on that sort of thing, but more of them being sold, if you want to sell it, you are going to have to start dropping your prices.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not going to be sold if a huge amount changes. I think the article, when I shared it, like 40% of the property investor or small property investors interviewed for that particular piece of research wanted to get out and were actively selling, whereas only about 10% were actively seeking on buying.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't quite know the specific numbers as far as sample size and all that, but that's still a pretty significant difference.
And I mean, you hear, and I think that's the reminder, right? I hear stories all the time of people like, oh, I made, you know, $900,000 on that, on you know, and selling my home or whatever it is. But it's not until you look at it that they brought it in 1940 for $39,000, which would have been a lot of money in 1940, yeah. Right? But of course, they're now selling it in 2026 when it's worth $900,000. So, I mean, that's the thing. I think what we've got is we've had that boom where those who potentially have made the most out of the market have made the most out of the market.
Oh, yeah, that's at the moment that has already happened. Because, yes, as mentioned earlier on in the show, house prices have just not been going up significantly since the COVID dropped off, basically. And in some cases, either going down or barely keeping up with inflation and not moving at all. And in those cases, you're not getting the extra wealth.
Yes. And I mean, I look at my own property that we own and live in, it's doubled in value in terms of on paper, but I don't think in order to get any, like, I don't see it doubling again in order for us to be able to sell it for $800,000 to make a massive amount of cash.
And then you run into the other problem of if you have an extra property, you do that, and then you have your nice cash. If that's a house you live in, you sell that, you need to find yourself a new house. And the most developers, and basically the market, is kind of set for if you sell a big family home and you want to move into a smaller new build, those are going to be doing for about the same price.
Right, so that you're not actually able to leverage whatever capital you have out of it.
Potentially,
because you've used it to buy in the same market that you've sold in.
Basically, yes. Yeah. So whatever you sell, you're going to need to get a new house.
Yes.
And a new build, you can expect it to be more expensive, but they are set for that sort of price because that is the maximum, basically, that people would be willing to pay. So that's what you charge, because that is the market working as intended.
Yes.
If this is a problem, then, well, that is why we should say that housing is not a perfect market, but that is another discussion for another day.
So if we weren't investing in property, would we still have enough? So if mum and dad investors, as the government likes to call it, weren't investing in property, would there be enough housing stock for everybody?
Well, the thing is, they're investing in existing properties. They're not building new ones.
So we're effectively trading on a set commodity, right?
Yeah.
Are we not?
Yeah, basically, yeah. So there's a set number, and small investors particularly, it's just going round and round within that. So whether they are there or not, we're still not getting more houses generally. It's the bigger investors and developers who are able to afford to build more, who would be doing the building more, maybe in some cases.
Yes, because it's worked on the assumption that they have a piece of land mm-hmm. that they then build three or four houses on and sell them at the market price, therefore giving them X amount of money.
Yep, the good old speculative building, and sometimes intentional for social housing and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's completely different subset of the market compared to the small investors. They're mostly, sometimes it'll be like a accidental landlord where your parents move on or die and you suddenly find that you've inherited an extra house. It's like, oh, well, we'll shove some tenants in there. All
yes.
good and fine. And in other cases, particularly probably about the 80s and the 90s, as soon as you paid off your mortgage, the banks were coming along and saying, hey, you don't have a mortgage. Would you like another one? You could buy a house and increase your wealth.
Yes.
But then again, it's still set on that already existing house that you are buying, because buying new or building a new one when you're just doing one or maybe two if you are extra ambitious, generally not worth the effort.
So, I mean, is it for someone new coming into it,
mm-hmm.
is that whole concept of mum and dad investors just a thing of the past, or is it still available to people, but you just have to be entering now in 2026 that this is an investment for that you have to have until 2050?
I would probably say this is a long-term thing anyway. If you're going to do that sort of small investor, you need to be doing it over 50 years, as you said earlier on anyway. If you're going in now and you're expecting to make a huge amount in 3 years' time, you are probably out of luck.
Yeah.
And this is one of those, this sort of thing has happened in the past where house prices start stabilizing or going down a little. However, people have a panic. The small investors decide, nope, we're out of this. We're never doing it again. And then the house prices start going up again at a later point. And everyone's like, oh, look, I bought when it was cheap and look at all this money that I made. So despite some of the context, I'm not sure that we can say that this is a fundamental change in the structure of our housing market. It is maybe a blip. If it does result in a fundamental change, then cool. I think that is well overdue. And there are better places to put your money as long-term investments than in housing. Because, you know, Aotearoa has some of the highest amount of investment in housing compared to, like, everywhere.
Yes. So is this whole, you know, the old mum and dad investors getting out of the property, is this not a transfer of wealth from one generation to another? Without actually having the money. You know, like if my parents, say, gave me $250,000 or $500,000, I'd have that. If they were to pass away and leave me their house, I have effectively an asset that I can still continue to keep, maybe generate some money, but also I could sell it for that amount of money if I chose to without them actually physically giving me any cash necessarily.
Well, I suppose that runs into the problem of, yes, it is intergenerational, but how it tends to be, particularly with the small investors, is it's the previous generation who are retaining the wealth and not leaving quite so much for the rest of us or the next generations. Because they've got the assets that they can leverage to make more money through investing. And then, of course, when one of their children die, all good and fine. You can, they will inherit at least some of those houses. For the people in the previous generation who didn't have a house to start with, you're still stuck without a house. So if your parents owned, then you will probably get to own something too. Yes. If your parents didn't, you will still not. And so it's intergenerational and more funneled towards a specific subset of that generation. I mean, that's one of those perpetuating inequalities that the housing market and its reliance on home ownership creates to start with.
Yeah. So are we not going to get to a point in the market where we have many multi-property landlords rather than going to mum and dad? Because I can see the onslaught, right? It's mum and dad investors exit. Someone's got to be buying these properties. So if it's not the next generation buying them, then it has to go to someone who has the money. And the biggest people that have the money are the people that already have the biggest portfolios. So I imagine more multi-billion, with multiple hundreds of properties, buying more properties simply just to add more properties to their portfolio.
Yep, that is a potential
conglomerate of house. I feel like Fonterra has the market for dairy farm, and I envision like three major conglomerate corporates owning all the property in New Zealand.
It's one of those. Yeah, that is something that could theoretically happen. I think the main difference there, I probably couldn't say whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm inclined to think it's probably more useful, is that when you own hundreds of houses and you are renting them, then you are a professional property investor. And that is where your income is.
Yes.
And so you're ideally going to be looking after your tenants and having a pretty good idea of the law. Doesn't mean that's going to be the case, but it's probably more reliable than, you know, Jill and Jeff down the street who just happened to own an extra house and are convinced that it is in fact their house and you're not allowed to do anything to it.
Yes.
Because private landlords who decide that your home is in fact their home after all don't tend to know the law and can make some pretty horrific
decisions.
Problems, yeah, that we see here all the time. So I think if we, when bigger ones start taking over a bit, that sort of thing can shift away. And the other main benefit, potential benefit, which again, it works in theory. I don't know if it would in practice. But when you own one home, or two or three, or even five, you're going to set the rent based on the mortgage payments and any other outgoings like rates and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
And you have to do that if you want to make any profit at all. So that rent is going to be higher than your than the average mortgage.
Yes.
If you happen to own 200 houses,
yes,
we'll say half of them, rent the mortgage is fully paid off.
Yes.
And the other half you've got some mortgage on, then you can spread the costs over all of them. So each individual house is still earning, is going to be paying less than the mortgage rate, enticing more tenants to come your way. But you will still be making a pretty good profit overall.
Yes.
And that's one of the benefits of having larger economies of scale, basically.
which is interesting because I see a lot of the banks changing the rules and stuff, and I don't see it having any impact on it. So if we were to take that this is what's happening, if we didn't have this happening, how would we make any meaningful impact into the property bubble to bring it down, other than simply just building more houses?
And that's definitely one way to see about doing it. Otherwise, if you want to have any influence on property bubble, then you're going to have to be changing interest rates through the OCR.
Yes.
It's, you know, higher interest rates means mortgages are more expensive, so fewer people will be taking them out. So basically, we'd have to go that way through, you know, monetary policy. That also needs to consider a lot of other things at the same time, you know, inflation in general.
So what do we do when renting becomes cheaper than buying a house?
I mean,
is that a sign that the market's broken?
I would say that's how it should be, because the thing about home ownership is that, hey, it's stable and secure and you've got your place and, hey, all good and fine. And renting is supposed to enable mobility. And if we decide it is the appropriate pathway to go from renting into home ownership, if you are paying more than a mortgage to rent, you're not going to be able to save. So you can't get a deposit.
Yes.
If you're paying less, then there is at least the potential of being able to put some money aside to get a deposit and show that, hey, my income is sufficient that I could pay off my mortgage.
Yes, because I think, and I was reading somewhere around this whole mum and dad investment thing, that it's interesting because it's getting a lot harder for some of them to get out of the market because mm-hmm. a lot of them are then using those properties or their own property to help their children get into property because yep. It's the to buy into the market is so high. So the only way to ensure that someone can get into is to have some collateral. And again, mum and dad's house is the quickest and easiest way to have capital.
Yep.
So then therefore they're tied to that property until we can be sure that the next people – or the people that you're helping out can secure and sustain their property without your capital.
Yep, and for that one, we're running into, again, that intergenerational inequalities. Your parents have a house, then they can get the collateral to get your house all good and fine. If they don't, well, you're still screwed.
Yes.
So it's continuing to funnel wealth into a smaller and smaller group. And just imagine if you happen to have three kids, you can't afford three houses.
No.
Do you pick one to give a house to and then the other ones are end up outside that transfer of wealth, or skip it for the lot of them, you know?
But isn't that the saying though, wealth creates wealth? Well, that's what the, you know, the business we were talking about. Oh, you know, you own a house and you create your wealth and you'll be, but that's on the assumption that your wealth is actually working productively for you.
Yeah, because houses, you only get the wealth when you sell it at the end, and it's only accruing that because the prices keep on going up. If the prices aren't going up, well, it's not making you more wealthy. And there are alternatives. Housing is definitely a stable one, or it has been traditionally a stable one, and it's traditionally been the one that you can get the most out of.
Yes, and it's interesting because in accounting, houses are considered a appreciating asset by the market. The things in the house depreciate, but overall, the house is an appreciating asset. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see what happens when we start seeing those assets become depreciating assets due to market forces. Because when it's the market that's deciding the value of something, then while we accept that the highs, we also have to be prepared for the lows that will come with it.
Yeah, very much so. It's a case of this is the market working as intended. If this is a problem, then maybe we shouldn't be relying on the market to determine who is able to have a house. And I would say housing is a human right. We shouldn't be relying on the market. But that's another matter again.
Yes. But, Daniel, that is all we have time for today. That's right. We are out of time. I know everyone's champing the bits to find out more about this hot topic, but we will carry on this conversation and many more in our next episode or edition of Flatting Today. So we just want everyone to stay warm and dry. Please keep yourself safe. And remember, you have the right to enjoy the property, but so do your neighbours. Stay safe.
Yep. Ta-ta for now.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.